with pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet, we begin this yet another session of Vahini Satsang. As always, along with me, Sai Prakash, and Bhagwan also has blessed Brother Sai Giridhar to be with us in the last few sessions. In fact, he's been there since we started this chapter, chapter 21 of Prema Vahini. And if you're referring to the Telugu version of Prema Vahini, the language in which Bhagwan had originally written this book, then it is chapter 7 in Telugu Prema Vahini. So we have had 4 sessions till now discussing this chapter. Today we are in the ultimate part of this chapter. We had divided this chapter into 5 segments, and we will now listen to the last segment of this chapter, and you will see how Bhagwan so beautifully ties everything to what is most significant after elaborating the entire sequence of our spiritual journey. Finally, he brings it out to the ultimate, and that is what is there in this final segment of chapter 21. So let's get on with it. We pray to Bhagwan to enable us to assimilate at least a little of what he has communicated. So let's begin to listen to this last segment of chapter 21.
నీవు నీలిరంగు అద్దములను నీ కన్నులకు వేసుకునినా ప్రకృతి అంతయును ఎన్నో విధములైన రంగులుగా ఉన్నప్పటికీ నీకు నీవు వేసుకున్న రంగు ఒక్కటి మాత్రమే కనిపించును కదా. లోకమంతయును భేదముగా కనిపించినా అది నీలోపమే. సర్వము ఒక ప్రేమగా కనిపించినా అది నీ ప్రేమయే. ఈ రెండింటికినీ నీలో ఉన్న భావమే కారణం. తనలో లోపములు ఉండుట వల్లనే లోకమున కూడా లోపములు కనిపించుచుండును. తనకు లోపమునున్నదే తెలియని సమయమున వెదకినను చిక్కదు. ఏవి లోపములో వానికి తెలిసిన కదా. అయితే మానవుని లోపములు పరమాత్ముడు వెదుకుచుండునా? పరమాత్మునియందు సైతము లోపములున్నవా అనవచ్చు. పరమాత్ముడు ఏనాటికి సద్భావమును చూచుచూ పోవును. కాని లోపములు పాపములు వెదకడు. అవి వారివారి గుణానుబంధములను బట్టి ఉండును. పరమాత్మ ధనము, కులము, గోత్రము, కీర్తి, విద్య, బలము, అధికారము, స్త్రీ పురుష లింగ భేదాదులేవీనూ చూడడు. సద్భావమును మాత్రమే చూచుతుండును. అట్టి భావము కలవాడు ఎవడైనను ఎట్టివాడైనను తన అనుగ్రహమునకు అర్హుడగును. కావున సద్భావమును అలవర్చుకునుడు. ఆనందము, ప్రేమలతో మెలగుడు. ఈ రెండును చాలు. తప్పక ముక్తులు కాగలరు.
If you wear blue eyeglasses, though nature is resplendent with many colors, you see only the color you have worn, isn't it? If the world appears to you as with differences, that is due to the fault in you only. If all appears as one prema, that too is your prema only. For both, the feeling in you is the cause. When there is no knowledge of fault, one cannot find fault even if one searches, because to find that, one must first be aware of it. Now a question may arise whether the Lord Himself has faults and whether He is searching for the faults in men. God searches for goodness only, not faults and sins. The latter are dependent on one's gunas. The Lord will not examine the wealth, the family, the gotra, the status, or the gender. He sees only sacred feelings, the sadbhava. Those endowed with such sadbhava, He considers as deserving His grace, whoever and whatever they may be. Therefore, develop sadbhava, or sacred feelings. Live and act in joy and love. These two are sufficient. Salvation can be attained without fail.
So that is the beautiful words that Bhagwan has written. I'm sure there'll be so many thoughts as you just listen to these words, because I think plenty of Bhagwan's messages echo in our mind as we listen to what Bhagwan has written here. I think any number of times we have heard Bhagwan mention about reaction, reflection, resound, isn't it? In fact, it took me quite some time to really understand this, you know, in a real sense. Not that I have understood, but at least we get a glimpse of how the avatar functions. The avatar is basically only this. He is just reaction, reflection, resound. In fact, I remember, I think Sai Prakash will remember, we had done that program in Sai Kulwanthal some time back, Who is Sai?
Mm-hmm.
And we said, Enta Matrumuna Evru.
Talachukunte Anta Matrume Sai.
Yeah, he is basically what you, you know, think him to be. He just all the time is reaction, reflection and resound. In fact, one of the discourses, all of us know this story. Bhagwan mentions how this village lad went to the hill. And, you know, as he was grazing his cows, he shouts out. And then, you know, he heard that voice shouting back. And then it happens the next day and he gets angry and he shouts harder. And, you know, when he hears his voice back to him, then he gets very perturbed. And he says, who is this mischievous person who is just reacting to whatever I say? Who is this impertinent person? Then he goes home and he tells his mother, and the mother comes and their mother explains. You know, it's a very simplistic story. Yes, the boy was very foolish. He did not really understand that, you know, whatever he's saying is only coming back. But when you think deeper, you know, Swami was saying, you know, we are telling that boy foolish, but actually, we are that foolish person all the time. Because, you know, whatever we are experiencing is only what is coming back to us. It's just that, you know, we don't get it because of the time lag. It is not happening as instantaneously as the echo happens from the mountain. But actually, everything that we are experiencing is what we have actually put out. That is only coming back.
Mm.
And we have Bhagwan, like the mother, coming and telling, hello, don't be foolish. Don't blame the mountain. Don't blame the air. Don't blame the hill. Don't blame anyone, it is only you. Just know that all you have, if you want to hear sweet words, if you want the mountain to love you, you also speak lovingly, the mountain also will love you.
Right.
You also sing sweetly, the mountain will sing for you. You also express your love and the mountain will fill you with in the same love. So I think that is what is one of the very beautiful things that appears. Bhagwan begins this segment by saying that if you wear blue glasses, though nature is resplendent with many colors, you will see only the color that you have worn because you are wearing the blue glasses. So, of course, this reaction, reflection, resound is something, even though we intellectually experience, know it, first to recognize it, I think it's sometimes so very difficult to really accept that fact that, you know, whatever is happening is because of what I have done. Because all the time we are saying, why did this happen to me? How could this happen to that person? That person is so good. How could this unfortunate happen to him? This person, I mean, for all I know about what he is not a nice person. But all the good things happen to him. And me, I am doing so much good work. I am doing seva. I am doing bhajans. I have been following Satya Sai Baba. Why did this happen to me? Why did my son did not get admission in Swami's college? We have been doing Naga Sankirtan for 5 years. You know, questions are unending. But I think, you know, all this in some ways are encapsulated if you think deeper about, you know, ultimately it boils down to reaction, reflection, resound is ultimately the law of karma. And in fact, I just remembered a very beautiful story I had heard about Wayne Dyer. I hope you have heard about Wayne Dyer. He's a very famous American philosopher.
Yes.
You know, he actually drew all his knowledge from Indian scriptures. Actually, he mentions Nisargadatta as his teacher. In fact, he always used to quote one saying of Nisargadatta: "Love says I am everything, and wisdom says I am nothing."
I am nothing.
I mean, that is the basis of Wayne Dyer's wisdom. Of course, he packaged it for a Western audience. So he was a very famous motivational speaker. In fact, his first book, Your Erroneous Zones, was the best-selling book for all time. It sold an estimated 35 million copies. It's basically our ancient Indian wisdom, you know, repackaged. I mean, it just shows, you know, how much the world is looking for this kind of wisdom. We just need to only share it in a manner that the world can relate to. So he talks about this interesting anecdote. You know, he once goes to this conference. It is called the I Can Do It conference because he used to do a lot of these motivational workshops. So he goes onto the stage and he takes an orange with him onto the stage. So before he begins his lecture, he picks up a 12-year-old bright guy and he says, you know, if I were to squeeze this orange as hard as I could, tell me what would happen.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And the fellow said, obviously, you know, juice will come out of it.
Mm.
Then Winder asks, do you think apple juice will come out of it?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, are you crazy?
Mm.
Why will apple juice come out of orange?
Mm.
He says, no, tell me, can grapefruit juice come out of this? He said, come on, stop kidding me. You know, this is an orange. Orange juice, of course, will come out of it. And then, you know, that boy was actually getting a little exasperated. You know, he was being treated as someone with such low IQ or whatever. And so he says, you know, it is an orange, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
What will come out is what is inside.
Absolutely.
And that is what exactly Weindeyer says.
Mm.
So that is what I am also trying to say. Just think of yourself as an orange.
Mm.
So when we squeeze you, when life squeezes you, what comes out, it is what is inside.
What is inside you, right.
Okay, so pressures are there all the time in everyone's life. Family pressures, to professional pressures, to social pressures, to relationship pressures, to all kinds of pressures. Swami talks about 12 types of chinta.
Right.
So he says, see, when pressures happen, so in those situations, if you're getting angry, if you're getting very mad at people around you, if you're just losing your cool, if you're just getting worked up about everything, if you're losing your patience, if you're just like yesterday, just this today, I mean, it's very shocking to read these kind of news items, you know. A ninth class boy, he could not be elected. As the school leader, his class leader.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, he was a bright student. And apparently there was an election, of course. I really don't think elections are good for, you know, such little children. But because he could not get elected, he just decided to take his life. Because he could not be elected as the class leader.
Mm.
So, I mean, I really don't want to talk about negative things, but you know, when you read these kind of things, you know, that's what you feel so sad. You know, we really need to do so much. And of course, I mean, this is just one of, there are a lot of students who handle pressure so fantastically. We don't read about them in the newspaper.
That's true.
But I think there are enough kids who are absolutely fantastic. But, you know, the point here is, as Weindeyer was, you know, very beautifully explaining through that orange, that, you know, when someone puts you through the grind, what comes out is what is inside you. If you want that, you know, even if when you are put through very difficult situations, the world should welcome you, the world should, you know, accept you, the world should not get exasperated with you, then he says, then you bring that out, you know, you bring out that love, you bring out that forgiveness, you bring out that forbearance, and obviously the world will react that way, and, you know, your world will be very different. So, I mean, this is just one story, but I felt it was something very interesting, very easy way to
absolutely
to bring out what Bhagwan has been all the time telling us. And of course, there are so many more stories, but I think I should have you share, because there are so many such stories that Bhagwan has mentioned in his discourses. Let's hear to you, Brother Sai Prakash.
Yeah, I mean, this is exactly the kind of thing I also had thought of. But looking at it from a slightly different angle, there was a very nice self-help book.
Mm-hmm.
And so he says that anyone who is striving to be happy, you are striving to be happy. That means there is no happiness in you.
Yes.
So if you are trying to be something, so the whole philosophy is don't try, just be.
Just be.
Because if you are trying to be something else, that means that is not what you are.
Yes.
So if you be yourself, then so that is one way of looking. But when Swami was talking about these blue glasses, so I was just thinking of what exactly these blue glasses are. And you know, some, I mean, you can always add to this or correct me if you think I'm going too tangential on this, but it is basically something that we put on.
Yes.
That gives us a false image of what we are seeing.
Correct.
So what Swami is saying here is the blue glasses that you put on gives you a false image of what you're seeing. Now, what could these blue glasses be? For example, there was a very interesting movie called Mad to be Normal. And that is about the life of Dr. Ronald David Lang. So basically, it's a very interesting study he did in the 60s where he actually worked with schizophrenic patients. Now, the thing is, they visualize things. They hear things.
Yes.
They are, you know, they are in a world of their own. And they think that is real. Now, obviously, if you see that film, you'll know that, you'll know the kind of problems they go through, because they have portrayed it very well. And they're saying, oh, that person is coming, this person is coming, but nobody else sees them, because they are imagining those things. So, you know, they have got that glasses, which makes them see something which is not there.
Correct.
So that is one level of glasses if you look at. So, but the beautiful part of that is his effort. He said at that time, the kind of treatment schizophrenic patients were given was, you know, electric shocks, so that their brain would just go almost, it will not, say, you know, bring out any signals. So it's kind of pushing it under the rug. It's kind of numbing the brain for that moment. But he took a completely different approach. And he said, I will believe in them. And I will not give them any medication and no treatment. I will just speak to them with love. And the kind of results he got were astounding. People were like amazed. Of course, the entire medical fraternity went against him. They said, how can you, there's no scientific way of proving that, you know, you are...
that love works.
That love works. Because in...
cannot be measured through science. And, you know, it is bordering on metaphysics and all that.
But he says, here are the results. Here are the results. And then he went through a lot of problems. So that's besides the point. But nevertheless, that is one kind of a filter. Like if you look at the glass, where it's an imagination such a patient is having. But there is another kind of glass which the society puts on us. Now, for example, there are several things which were not acceptable several decades earlier and which are acceptable today. Certain behavioral patterns, certain approaches may have been taboo some time back. And then, okay, when everybody believed that the sun was going around the earth, and then, you know, somebody stood up and spoke against it and was actually executed. And then later, now the whole world believes that the earth goes around the sun. So, society puts one glass on your eyes. And, you know, this is very interesting because... there is this very nice YouTube video by John Oliver. You know, he combines a lot of humor with a lot of current events. And this is about gene editing. Gene editing, and there is this term called CRISPR. So basically what it says is you can cut segments of the DNA which actually correspond to certain problems, health problems and all that. And you can replace them with other ones so that there is a cure. Like, for example, you can replace the DNA genome which causes the mosquito to cause malaria. If you start giving, if you start breeding mosquitoes which cannot cause malaria because of that particular gene, that particular segment of the DNA, then you can eradicate malaria from the earth. So that is one positive way of looking at CRISPR. CRISPR technology is, of course, how you can cut the genome and cut out portions of the DNA.
Mm.
Now, the interesting part is the ethical issues about the whole thing.
Yeah.
Like, who are we to decide whether such and such a thing is good and such a thing is bad?
Mm.
So, this is based on the filter that society puts on us.
Yes.
Now, for example, in that show, there was this lady who is a dwarf.
Mm-hmm.
And she says, this is the second generation of dwarfs. I'm happy. I don't have issues with being a dwarf.
Mm.
And my children are happy. They are also dwarfs. We don't mind it. But what society looks at us, that is what is very difficult to accept. Because society looks down upon you.
Mm.
By yourself, you're happy. So that is one glass you're wearing.
Hmm.
What society looks down upon you is one more level of glass.
The one others think you are.
One others think you are. Yeah. And there is another subtler glass that you're wearing.
Yes.
That is the glass of the gunas.
Yes.
Like, for example, you know, you have your own. Yes.
The one you think you are.
You think you are.
You think you are.
Not the one you really are.
Exactly.
So the glasses of gunas is something which is very, in fact, Swami goes as far as telling that the sattva guna is white in color,
yes,
the rajoguna is red in color, and tamoguna is black in color. So just imagine you wearing three different types of glasses. But still, that's a glass.
It's still a glass.
So you are looking at the world through a glass, which is already qualified, which is already, you know, it's not giving you the actual picture of what there is.
Correct.
And of course, this is something which we have spoken on a great length, that is the glass of ignorance.
Yes.
So if you think that the world is real and Brahma is unreal, that God is unreal.
Yes.
So, Brahma, Mithya, Jagat, Satyam, if you think that way.
Yes. Then come to the one you really are.
So, that is another pair of glasses which you are wearing.
Yes.
Which, you know. So, you know, on this whole issue about belief and biology, like, everything starts from the belief of what you think you are and what you... There's a lot of science that is, you know, tending towards that direction. And
absolutely.
I'm sure there so many papers and so many videos all over the net telling you what it is.
Yes.
There is one Dr. Bruce Lipton.
Exactly. I've just read about him.
So he has done a lot of work
lot
on
of
this
work. Yes.
Biology of belief.
Yes.
And there's an elaborate YouTube video of how he gives how your perception can change your DNA.
Yes.
Basically, how they can control your behavior. First of all, perception controls behavior, and how they control genes and how they can rewrite genes.
Rewrite genes.
So basically, that entire thing is a lot of you know, scientific. And he keeps repeating in that video, very interesting. Yeah, I'm not asking you to have devotion. I'm not asking. This is pure science, pure sense. So my point is, how is devotion different from science? But anyways, so that's a convenient way. He says, no, I'm not asking you to have any devotion. It's pure science. So he says that, and then something very interesting he says.
Mm-hmm.
He says, everything is based on perception filters.
Absolutely. Wow.
So perception filters.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So that filter can be defined by you.
Yes.
It can be defined by society. It can be defined by your beliefs. It can be defined by anything.
Yes.
But then, nevertheless, it's a filter. And the only time you can actually get to see what is real, and in that entire talk he says, cells have this tendency of going either towards growth or they repel from something which is not good for them. So he says, imagine your entire body is full of these trillions of cells.
Mm.
And the one thing which all the cells go towards and where they exhibit, you know, positive growth is love.
Love.
And where there is anything that causes fear, they repel from it. And so because they repel from it, there is no growth.
Mm.
They go into a self-protection and preservation kind of a behavior. It's all very interesting, of course, now that science is waking up to this.
Exactly.
Yad bhavam tad bhavati is in one small line. Our ancient people have said, enough of all that. Yad bhavam tad bhavati, that's it.
That's it.
Now go on to other things.
It's very interesting that Brother Prakash mentioned this this finding that your perception shapes your behavior.
Yes.
There's a very famous Zen story where there is a man who was rowing his boat in a lake, and he is just fought with his family, his wife, and all that, and all with all that thing going on in his mind, he was looking for some peace. So he was rowing his boat in a lake, and suddenly another boat from behind comes and just taps his boat.
Yes.
So he now writhing in anger, who is this that has who has collided with my boat?
Yes.
With all that anger, he turns around to shout, and to his utter shock and amazement, he finds that the boat is empty.
Empty.
A manless boat has just drifted away in the lake, and it had come and it had struck his boat from behind.
Mm-hmm.
So when he saw that there was actually nobody in the boat to shout at, he kind of understood the comedy of his own error, right? He started laughing at himself, and all his anger and everything vanished that very moment. Why? Because the anger was directed by his perception. It was not by any directed towards an actual individual.
Yes.
Because he didn't know what the reality was.
Correct.
And somehow all of us are lurking according to the Vedanta, according to Bhagwan. Yes. All of us are lurking like this man, in the sense that our attention is diverted to something which we are not sure about what it is. We don't know the reality of what it is. So it's only working through our perception. In fact, the idea, Brother Prakash mentioned this very famous verse in Sanskrit, which was given by Adi Shankaracharya, in a sense, where he highlighted this and said, Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya. So the, which means Brahman or Supreme Divinity, or the presence, the eternal presence, the self, that alone is truth.
Right.
Jagan Mithya, Jagat means that which comes and goes, which is this whole creation, is Mithya, or it's an illusion. Usually when this is presented to any rationalist, or even common man for that matter, the question that arises is, how come this is Mithya? I see the table in front of me, I see the people around me, if somebody hits me, I feel it. So similarly, if any transaction that I do in this world is so real, the pleasure is real, the pain is real, everything is real, how come it's an illusion? Right? And in fact, this was a question which even Sri Rama was said to have asked the great Brahma Rishi Vasishta in the conversation that happened between the two, which is recorded as Yoga Vasishta. Rama says, at every point of time, Gurudev, you're telling that, this world is unreal, it's an illusion, it's Maya, but I'm unable to appreciate that because I can see it, I can feel it, and it seems absolutely real. In fact, this was a question that Rama himself...
Rama knew a lot of people will have this question.
Yeah, so he did a lot on our behalf, Very poor students, in the sense. I remember our awareness teachers literally imploring us to, ask questions, inquisitive questions, and there would be none, and they themselves would then facilitate some kind of question, so that we would benefit from that.
At least whenever later you wake up and, just like, after so many generations, at least somebody is waking up and asking that question. At least because he has asked that question, then we have answers recorded.
So, in fact, one perspective that is given to Brahma Satyam Jagan Mithya is that it is not that the world doesn't exist, because you see the existence of the world, but it doesn't exist that the way you perceive it to be, because each one's perception of this world is very, very different, and the world seems to them exactly in the way that they perceive the world to be. So that is what is meant by illusion. Means it is, but not the way you think it is.
Yatha drishti tatha
srishti. So the way that you think of it, or you visualize, that is how it is. In fact, talking about this particular point, I was wondering, while going through the transcript of the translation of this section, what is it that Swami is trying to drive home to us? What is the lesson that Swami is trying to highlight? So I had to take refuge in the previous discussion that we have had, yes. Segment, because yes. Without that, it is kind of course, we can talk about yad bhavam tad bhavati, as you think, so you, experience the world in great detail. It's a topic by itself. But in the context of Prema Vahini here, I was trying to see what is it that Swami is trying to drive home, what is the message that Bhagavan is giving us.
Mm-hmm.
So in the previous segments, Swami speaks about ekagrita or one-pointedness. In fact, in the last segment, we also spoke about gopikas, who were the very embodiment of what true love really means. And Swami had himself said that it's impossible to understand love. The only way to realize love is by sarvarpita bhavam, that is complete surrender, total surrender, as exhibited by the gopikas. And we briefly discussed about the gopikas,
right,
and said that, you know, in fact, in a discourse, Swami reveals the secret of how they attained the sarvarpita bhavam. Swami says that they had okka manasu, or only one mind,
yes,
and that Krishna took away. They say, we had only one mind, O Uddhava, and that one mind Krishna took away. So now we have no mind to perceive this world. Brother Prakash was mentioning that there are various glasses through which we are looking at the world. That's why it's an illusion. Because what you perceive of the world is depends on the color of the glass that you wear. So here also Bhagavan is mentioning that if you perceive the world to be filled with prema, it's your own prema that that finds its reflection in the world.
Yes.
So you're wearing the pink glasses of love,
yes,
and hence you see,
absolutely,
the whole world as love. That is something which Swami used,
yes,
to often,
yeah,
say. But coming back to the concept, Brother Prakash has led to a very, very interesting and intriguing concept. Now imagine there are different lenses that we wear. Right? Suppose we take and throw away all the lenses, then what remains?
Right.
Then what is the perception of the world that remains? So this is a very important thing to ponder about, because in the previous segment which we discussed last week, Bhagavan in fact concluded that segment by saying, simply decide for yourself to be firmly fixed in your reality.
Yes.
If that is pure, everything is pure. If that is true, everything is true.
Correct.
Right? So Swami is basically telling, be fixed in your reality. Means, yes, don't wear any glasses.
Yes.
Throw away all the glasses and see what is left. That is your reality, really. And that is pure, and hence everything is pure. And as the Upanishads try to describe what, you know, it's again impossible to describe in words, but the Mandukya Upanishad says that when you are established, fixed in your own reality, that is Shantam, Shivam, Advaitam. Advaitam, it's not, you're only one, there is no second in that. Shantam, it is absolute pure incarnate. And Shivam, it is pure auspiciousness. So they try to, but literally fail, in the sense that,
yes,
they say this is the at best, the words that can describe what your reality is. So Bhagavan was pointing out that to achieve this state very naturally, again I go back to the verses in the Prema Vahini, where Swami says that if you have attained one-pointedness of mind,
yes,
then this reality reveals itself to you. Just like we discussed the,
yes,
example of Manasarovar,
yes,
the crystal clear, you know, placid lake.
Yes.
So the crystal clear placid lake automatically reveals what is there in its depth, in its core. In the same way, Bhagavan is saying, if you have ekagrita or one-pointedness, your mind will be absolutely still, and in that stillness, reality reveals itself. You know what your reality and remain fixed in that. So this is the context that Swami has provided of ekagrita, one-pointedness, and fixing your attention on yourself, on your true real state, right?
Yes, yes.
From this point of view, he has continued to say that, you know, whatever color of glass that you wear, you will start perceiving the world in that manner.
Yes.
And if you don't pay attention to your faults, you will never be able to catch them and rectify them.
Correct.
Okay, so then the question arises, what does it have to do with one-pointedness that a sadhaka, a disciple of Bhagavan, you know, he has to achieve this one-pointedness? What does it have to do with one-pointedness? In fact, again, the answer is in the same discourse. I was actually thrilled when this struck me that in the same discourse where Swami talks about the one mind of the Gopikas, E Okka Manasu, he says, Ade Ekagritamu, Ade Dhyanamu. He uses these two words, that one mind is Ekagrita and Dhyan. So, Ekagrita, one-pointedness, is used by us in every activity that we do. For example, Brother Vishu, if you have to prepare for the radio show and you're making notes, you have to have concentration, one-pointed attention on what you're doing, isn't it? Otherwise, it is not possible for you to, develop your content. So, Ekagrita is essential to achieve success in any field. That is why the second point comes into being from what Swami is trying to highlight here, which is dhyanamu. Dhyanamu means, in very rudimentary term, dhyan means attention. You know, in families today, we always say this, the wife is always asking the husband, or the mother is always asking the son who is on the mobile phone all the time, Are tera dhyan kidhar hai? You know, I'm calling you from this long, where is your attention? Can't you pay attention to me? So this happens all over in all our families. You see this thing happen. What dhyan in a very, very simple way means attention. Here Bhagwan is saying that a sadhaka, a disciple of Bhagwan, has to have these two qualities. One is ekagrata, one-pointedness, but that should not be directed towards the world alone. That has to be diverted towards one's own reality. Right? And here Bhagwan is again reiterating the fact that as long as you don't identify, you are not aware of your faults, which means the pleasant lake is now polluted with, various faults. You are not removing the dirt from the lake. So if the lake is dirty, we cannot see what is at the core of the lake, isn't it?
Yes.
In the same way, if the mind is impure, it has many faults in it, we won't be able to identify our reality to turn our attention towards it, fundamentally. So that is where the issue is. And Swami says, in order to identify your faults, first you should be aware. There is a very interesting analogy which one of the prime disciples of Adi Shankaracharya gives, a beautiful analogy to understand what awareness means in this practical sense. Mandan Mishra, who is from the current state of Bihar in India, was one of those who had challenged Adi Shankaracharya for a debate. And Swami very beautifully explains the scene where his own wife Ubhaya Bharati becomes the judge of the scene.
Yes.
And the judgment was that garland of jasmine flowers will be put on each of them. That is Mandan Mishra, the great scholar in the Karma Kanda. He was a great scholar in the karmic, that is the Karma Kanda part of the Vedas, which deals with the rituals and the various activities, dharmic activities. And here was Adi Shankara, the doyen of Advaita, who was debating with him. And the decision, Ubhay Bharati said, is whose, garland of jasmine becomes rotten or fades away first, they are the losers. By a very simple logic, that if you don't have steadiness of mind, or because of lack of conviction, or if the points that you're making are causing disturbance in your mind, which means they are not the truth and they are not coming from the source, as a result your mind will be agitated. The result of agitated mind will be increase in body temperature.
Correct.
And the increase in body temperature will increase the rate at which the flower decays.
Correct.
So this was the logic behind the judgment, and the garland was placed on both of them. Of course, Adi Shankaracharya won it, and Mandan Mishra took up sannyasa as per the rule of the debate, and Ubhaya Bharati, his wife, also took up sannyasa because she said, I have to follow whatever my husband does. So now that he is going to take sannyasa, I will also take sannyasa. And Swami glorifies this great woman, Ubhaya Bharati, for her chastity, also for her great wisdom. She is like Mother Saraswati herself. That's how, scholars and masters describe her. But the whole idea here is this, Mandan Mishra, who became a disciple of Adi Shankaracharya, was given the name Sureshwaracharya. So the great saint now, sage now, Sureshwaracharya, had given in his work, which is called Naishkarma Siddhi, a particular analogy to explain what awareness really means. And let me put it in very layman terms. Suppose we are walking on the road, and our attention in the modern context is on our phone. So there is some message which has come in WhatsApp, or there is an image that has popped up in Instagram. So our attention is completely on that. And there is a stone on the road as we are walking. So any guesses what would happen? If the stone is really on the path on which we are walking, then what would happen?
You trip on the stone.
We trip and fall. That's what happens, right? The stone is always present. That is, the object of awareness is always present. It was there on the road.
Right.
Then why is it that you were not aware?
Your attention was elsewhere.
Because the attention was elsewhere. So Sureshwaracharya explains awareness in very, very simple terms. He says, the object of awareness first should exist. Second, your attention should be on it.
On it, right.
Both are important. So object should exist and our attention should be on it. In this case, Swami is telling, fix your attention on your reality. So your reality exists or not, there is no doubt, because in this world, man may have self-confidence or not, he may achieve anything or not, he may believe in anything else or not, he believes 100% that he exists, yes or no. Right? So his existence is not a paradox for him. In that sense, that he has no doubts in his mind that he exists fundamentally, right? That existence is the reality. That existence or isness is the truth, right? Which is called Satchita Ananda. And Bhagavan is saying that the attention should be on that existence. So according to Sureshwaracharya, the object of awareness is available in reality. That is, your fundamental existence is always there. So object is there. Now what was lacking on the guy who tripped over the stone? His attention was not on the object. So awareness comes of your reality only if your attention is on your reality. But for this attention to be on your on the reality, there are two things that you need. And the two things that you need are, you have to be fundamentally have some kind of an attraction towards it. Swami uses the word priyam, modam and pramodam. You have to have love for God. Love for God, who is your true self. Unless you have love for your true self, your attention will never divert towards the true self, isn't it? So in the same way, priyam or love itself is the reason why you turn your attention inward towards your own reality. Now for this to happen, for us to perceive this reality, what is necessary is that we have to identify our faults clearly and eliminate them from the mind. Why? If the mind is murky, the reality is not evident and apparent to us. In the same way, if the mind is disturbed by various emotions and feelings, again, the reality is not apparent to us. And hence, in this segment, Bhagavan says that God's attention is only on one thing, which is Sad Bhavana. Sad Bhavana means pure feelings. The purity of feelings is like a crystal clear Manasarovar, a placid lake, where the reality becomes very, very evident and apparent to us. So this can be potentially understood by the story which Swami relates about Duryodhana and Yudhishthira. Your perceptions and the kind of thoughts and feelings that you constantly entertain, that is what, you know, decides what is the state of your mind. It is going to be pure or is it going to be murky? Lord Krishna once calls Duryodhana and Yudhishthira and tells them, why don't you go into the town and find out, you know, how many people are there who are better than you in various qualities and skills? So both of them...
Yeah, we know the story.
Absolutely. Yeah. So yeah. They come back and what yes. They are reflects in yeah. The...
So in fact, you know, as Brother Sai Prakash was mentioning about these glasses.
Right.
You know, in fact, you know, you took it from the physical level to the deepest level.
Right, different you know, levels
different
of glasses.
Levels of glasses. Mm. Mm. And when I was thinking about it, you know, at the core level...
Mm.
So, what you mentioned as the one glass is ignorance. And I think if you go to the Vedantic level and if you go to the depth of what Swami is telling all the time, this glass is basically your body consciousness.
Yes. Mm.
So if you don't have that body consciousness, then you are fixed, as Brother Giridhar was telling, you are fixed on your reality. In fact, what came to my mind was that analogy that Bhagwan gives about the dog. Mm-hmm. You know, the dog goes into this a hall of mirrors.
Mm, yes.
And so once he goes there and the dog growls and, you know, he sees that all the...
So many dogs,
so many dogs are growling back.
Absolutely.
And then, you know, he feels, what is this? You know, how are these dogs growling at me? And so he gets mad and he goes and, you know, dashes against one mirror. And now it's so many more pieces of glass. And there are, you know, if earlier there were 10 dogs, now there are 10 into 10, 100 dogs growling at him.
Correct.
But Swami says, see, that is what dog does.
Mm.
But suppose a man goes into the hall of mirrors, he sees
himself.
That, you know, there are so many reflections. You know, he's full of admiration. He's so happy actually because he's seeing, and when he notices that, you know, if there is a little bit of something on his shirt which is not nice, all he has to do is to just remove that from his shirt. Then, you know, in all the images, it is automatically done.
Yes.
It happens.
Mm.
So, I think that is, you know, a simple analogy. But I think what Swami is telling is, you know, all the time when you look at the world and you say, you know, no, there is this dirt there. There is that not so nice thing there on that face. There is a mark. On that other person's character, whatever. Swami is telling, just remove that from your...
Yeah, it's a reflection of your inner being.
Yeah, just remove that. Then, you know, you'll find everything beautiful. And when you go to the depth of it, so what Swami is telling is, this is what God is. Because God is all the time established in His reality. Because He's all the time thinking of Himself only as the Atma.
Mm.
That's why He sees only Atma.
He sees only that.
He sees only that, and that's why He's all the time Anandam. That Satchidanandam that we talked about, you know, He's constantly in bliss. Swami says, this is what you can also be.
In fact, the last sentence of the segment is, Swami is telling, if you have Prema and Ananda,
yes,
and Prema here is Sat and plus Chit,
exactly,
as Swami would say,
yes,
Sat plus Chit itself is the definition of Prema here.
Yes, absolutely.
And its fragrance is Ananda. Mm. So if we are established in Prema and Ananda, that is enough to ensure the success of self-realization for the sadhaka. And that is in fact the final declaration by Bhagwan in this particular segment.
There is one very interesting story in this Sri Satyasa Ananda Dai, which Swami says. Mm. So there's this disciple who goes to the Guru and he says, I want to have the vision of Lord Vishnu.
Mm-hmm.
He says, see, it's not so simple. You'll have to pass through a lot of tests.
Mm.
And then he says, no, I want to go. And then he says, okay, be cautious. And he goes. So he goes to Vaikuntha and sees both the Dwarapalakas are fully drunk.
Swami is narrating this.
Swami is narrating this. And he says, oh my God, I don't want to get into this kind of Vaikuntha. And he comes back. As he's coming back, he says, no, my guru told there will be a lot of tests. Mm. I'll go back again.
Mm.
So he goes back again and they say, What are you coming here for? There's nothing here. Go back. He said, no, I have to go, I have to go. He said, okay, you want to go inside? Go. And he goes inside, Lord Vishnu is drunk. And Lord Vishnu kicks him. And he says, get out, what are you coming here for? And he says, oh my God. And then again he loses heart, he comes back again. Then again he says, no. And then again he goes back and he is very firm. No, I want. Then in 1 second the Lord gives him darshan.
Yes.
So when I was just reading that story, it's very interesting because of the point of ekagrata you are talking.
Mm.
The moment your attention goes that, oh my God, Lord Vishnu is drunk. So your attention is on Lord Vishnu and drunk. There are two things. Mm. It's not on Vishnu, Lord Vishnu alone. So your ekagrata has been disturbed there.
Yes.
So if your attention is on the Lord who is beyond guna, gunatita. See, basically, that's why Swami says, and Lord Krishna also says, you like me, you worship me, or you hate me. Whatever, it doesn't matter. That intensity of just contemplating me, that's enough.
And in fact, these faults which are there in us, what they do, in fact, they are the gunas itself, the rajoguna and the tamoguna specifically.
Yes.
Sattvaguna also Bhagavan describes as a golden chain that binds us, which has to be transcended. But primarily the rajoguna and tamoguna are what are the faults that are, in the sense of thought process I'm talking about. Otherwise, all the three gunas are actually equally important in the creation, in terms of Srishti Sthiti Laya,
that's a separate topic altogether.
Yeah, that's a separate dealing.
Yes.
But in terms of thoughts, one has to eschew the tamoguna and rajoguna. It's very important. So as long as these faults are there in us, somehow we will not be able to progress and see, first of all, have the vision of our own reality. If somebody tells you, pay attention on this object, and you're not able to see that object at all, how will you pay attention, isn't it?
Yes.
So in the same way, unless the reality is made apparent to you by the grace of Sadguru, how will you know what your reality is? We'll only be talking about it. And in the previous segment, Swami says, no amount of scholarship or argumentation is going to help you. You have to do the sadhana, earn the grace of Sadguru. And
even here, Swami very clearly again reiterate that. Swami says, the Lord will not examine the wealth, the family, the status, the gotra or the gender. He sees only sacred feelings, sadbhava. In fact, the first segment as we talks about sadbhava.
Sadbhavana.
You know, there Swami is saying that, once the sweetness of that name has been experienced, the person will not feel exhausted, restless, or lazy. He will fulfill his pilgrimage of sadhana joyfully, enthusiastically, and with deep conviction. Still, for achieving the sadhana, sadbhava or sacred feelings are very important.
Important.
So you have the first segment, sadbhava, and comes back again to sadbhava here, where Bhagwan is saying that the Lord sees only sacred feelings. Sadbhava.
Because this is, I think, Brother Sai Prakash, you can also possibly further elaborate on this. Many feel that, so I am not this body, I am not this mind. So, which means I am free of all the crimes that the body and the mind does. In fact, there is a mantra which is chanted yearly for those who wear the sacred thread. You know, there is a mantra that says, Kamo karashit manyura karashit namo namaha. Kamak karta naham karta kamak karayita naham karayita. You know, manyura karashit namo namaha. Manyuk karta naham karta. Which means, it is the desire that is, leading into action. It is the mind that is leading to action. It is not me. This is from the standpoint of experiential understanding that the sages say.
Yes.
But we use it for convenience. So we'll say, no. Whatever is being done by the body and the mind is being done by the desires of the body and mind. It is mind which is, initiating all action. So I am free and I am the self. So merely saying will not help. That is why this example of, if I say, look at this object and you can't see the object itself, how will you pay attention on it? So unless we know our reality in experience, in direct experience, how will you pay attention on it?
Yes.
So Bhagwan, I remember an experience of one of our brothers here, a very, very profound experience in this regard. That brother was in the interview room and he was actually reporting to Swami based on Bhagwan's guidance. He had done his sadhana sincerely and he was reporting to Swami about his progress and what experiences he had and everything. Swami listened to everything very nonchalantly without, he was hoping that Swami would be joyful or, really give a pat on his back for all the progress that he had made, but that didn't seem to be the case. Then, as he was reporting to Swami all his progress, he came to a point where he spoke about the one issue that he was having or one fault that he could see in himself. And he said, Swami, this is something which I'm really trying to overcome. I'm unable to overcome. Then Swami showed enthusiasm, and Swami said, now tell me what that is. all the achievement parts, he didn't show any enthusiasm. But moment he said, this is one fault, Swami was very enthusiastic to know, tell what is this further. Why? It's like Swami himself told the student who was a disciple, in the sense that he was practicing sadhana which Swami had given. Swami told him, Sira, I am not interested in the 99% of progress that you have achieved. I am concerned about that 1%,
yes,
which is still lacking. Why? That 1% is enough to make you run in the cycle of birth and death, yes, again and again and again. 1% is enough. So even one fault is not permissible in sadhana,
yes,
in that sense.
Yes.
So Swami was telling that one fault which is there, or one deficiency which is there, my complete attention is on that. I want to eradicate, and you have to be 100%. So that is the Guru's expectation. Yes. That is Swami's expectation from his disciples.
Like, this is a common experience, you know, with Bhagwan. As you do your sadhana, every time you reach a particular threshold, you simply raise the bar.
Exactly.
Simply raise the bar. Constantly. And I think anybody who is, you know, really sincere, you know, you think, wow, I've achieved this. And suddenly you see, hello, what? Still, you know, there is so much more. But I mean, he will give you all the strength. He will give you all the courage. But I think that is what the ultimate master wants, the ultimate perfection.
That in that conversations with Sai Baba, with Dr. Yes. John Hislop's.
Yes.
So he asked Swami, Swami, now all these years I have been listening to your discourses, and I so am I a realized person? Swami says, no. Then he says, then what is wrong? I have understood this body, mind, thoughts, all this thing, and Atma, and all that I have understood. Swami says, you know it theoretically. You are not experiencing it.
Yes,
then he says,
exactly.
Then what is the experience? He says, when you walk out on the road and you feel the pain of the person sitting on the road.
Automatically.
When you feel his pain, you don't know that he is suffering, but you feel his pain.
Feel it.
That is when you have realized.
That unity. I mean, ultimately that's what spirituality is all about.
He says, when you feel one with him and you feel this pain, that's what it is.
In fact, I heard a story of, you know, one brother was narrating this. Many years back I've heard the story, where this brother was in a satsang of a realized master, right? And the satsang was going on, and suddenly in the middle of the satsang, the realized master got up and he ran out of the house or the room where he was giving satsang, and you know, and quickly went and relieved one dog that was you know, stuck in a pool of slush, which is actually a drainage in that which, you know, there are so many open drainages in many of the towns. So in one of those towns where the open drainages were, the dog was stuck there and it was in great pain. None of the people could hear, because it was not at a point, a distance where they could hear it. They were all much younger in age, so their hearing ability should have been even more sharp. But this master, who was actually, you know, giving a discourse, he was able to immediately sense the pain of a dog which was far away, and he stopped the discourse and ran and went and rescued the dog first. So what Brother Sai Prakash is highlighting here is key, because once you have the experience, then it's that is when you know what the reality is.
Means just one observation, like, see, Swami is the ultimate. My life is my message, he says.
Yes.
So when the Gujarat earthquake happened, he didn't say that, oh, it is their karma, they have gone through Gujarat earthquake. Immediately he, you know, started sending respondent. When Orissa floods happened, how Swami responded?
In fact, Brother Sai Prakash, there is a very interesting story to which I am a first hand witness here, regarding the Gujarat earthquake. What had happened was, Bhagwan had sent truckloads of relief material to Gujarat, along with, of course, Brother Sai Prakash would know it very well, about the incidents that took place, which Swami had sent some students as well.
In the
group. Along with Sevadal from Mehboob Nagar and even Hyderabad districts at that point of time. But during that scene, I'm talking about a scene that happened in the Sai Kulwant Hall. Swami had just flagged off all the lorries that were going. They're going via the Gopuram gate, you know, and Swami was standing in the Ganesh portico, and he was speaking to the boys at that time. And one of the professors, told this to Swami, this was one of the most thrilling experiences I had to know what, you know, at least the glimpse, possibly the...
Glimpse the heart of Bhagwan.
the unconditional love which Swami is, you know.
Correct, yeah.
And it was overwhelming. It still overwhelms just to think about it.
Absolutely.
That professor asked Swami, he said, Swami, pedda seva Swami, he said, it's a very big seva that you're doing. You know what Swami asked the professor? Neeku pillalu unnara? Do you have children? So he said, yes Swami, I have children. Aithe vaallu kinda padite debba tagilte nuvvem chestavu? If they fall and they get hurt, what will you do? So the professor says, Swami, I will immediately rush towards them and, you know, lift them, console them first, and then give first aid and whatever is necessary, I will immediately do some. Adiyam pedda seva chestunava, he said. Is that a big service, seva that you are doing to them, to your own children? And then in one phrase, you know, Swami captured all our hearts. And he showed us what it is to live in that, live in love. When Swami says live in love, he was a living love, you know. And in one phrase, and Swami said, Idi na panira, he said. This is my work, my duty. Means, I am the cosmic parent.
Yes.
So wherever there is pain, I experience it. The mother experience, you know, this is a common thing with many of them, many people in the world know this, that when children are undergoing suffering, many times in different parts of the world, the mother feels it, wherever they are, intuitively, and she feels the pain, she knows that something is going wrong. You know, so that is the deep, intricate connection, the umbilical cord, though physically is cut at the time of birth.
And the mother is there only with you for this birth, but the Lord is with you.
Yes, that is why birth. Swami says, you can never understand my love, because it's a thousand mothers' love. Thousand mothers, I'm sure is an understatement. In that sense,
it's symbolic.
It's very symbolic, but Swami's love is unbelievable. And the Advaita Darshanam Jnanam, that Jnanam is prema only. It
absolutely
is not. There is no bhakti and jnana and all that in that. That Advaita Darshanam is jnana, it is only prema.
Because if you are established in the self, you can only love. There's nothing else. In fact, when you're talking about this Gujarat thing, I was reminded of a similar thing that happened in the super speciality hospital in Whitefield, when Bhagwan, you know, inaugurated this facility, and, you know, the systems and processes were put in place. And, you know, because I was in the information systems department, so, you know, we were making this patient discharge summaries. So, you know, this idea came up that, you know, so much is being spent for every patient, so why don't we also print the cost of the surgery and the cost of the consultation, and, you know, and we will write it in bold there that, you know, free. You know, but let them know that like 2 lakhs was spent on you, or 3 lakhs was spent on, you know, by the hospital on your treatment, just so that, you know, they have gratitude, they know, you know, they realize the value. I mean, there's a lot of justifications for, you know, the good points about why we should do it. So this is what was presented to Bhagwan, that, you know, we are thinking of doing this, and, you know, you can probably guess the answer. Swami said, of course, Swami made it sweeter with a beautiful example. Swami said, imagine a guest is coming to your home, and, you know, so you have welcomed them and you have made them comfortable. You have served them a very beautiful lunch. And after they are rested, you know, they are leaving the house, and you tell them, you know what, thanks so much for coming. We actually spent 500 rupees, you know, for your lunch. But it's okay, you don't have to pay. It's okay. So I said, would you ever do that, you know? So why are you even thinking? I mean, it is for Swami, you know, if you think of Swami's point of view, Swami's thinking like, how can they even think like that? You know, this is, you know, I think all these thoughts come because if you think someone else is different from you. And I think here, finally, it all boils down to love. Yeah, Giridhar, you want to?
In fact, this is kind of divine providence. I just got a message and I would like to read out that message, randomly sent by somebody. And the message is the shloka of Bhagavad Gita, 10th chapter, 9th shloka.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just going to tell the translation of that, which is so apt and so beautiful to conclude possibly this section.
Yes.
The thoughts of my devotees, Lord Krishna is saying, the thoughts of my devotees always dwell upon me. Their lives are dedicated to me. And they find great happiness and bliss in discussing me.
Absolutely.
Mad bhakta, mad gada prana, bodhe anta paraspara.
Wow. Beautiful. And, you know, just to sort of summarize this segment, and of course, in this segment, in a sense, summarizes everything that we have been discussing, you know. Here, Bhagavan is talking about this reaction, reflection, resound. You know, just one thing to remember is like our lives are not determined by what happens to us, but how we react to what happens to us and how we perceive what happens to us. It is not by what life brings to us, what the attitude we bring to life. We
Very
bring
good.
To life. I think, you know, those are some of things that it will help us to always remember. And we should always know that a positive thought causes a chain reaction. You know, it can even change our genes. It is difficult to believe, but that is the reality. You know, a positive thought can lead to a reaction of positive thoughts, events and outcomes. It is a catalyst. It will give us extraordinary results. And I remember this very beautiful quote of Mahatma Gandhi. He says, the pure love of one soul can offset the hatred of millions. So I think all we have to do is, as they say, live simply, walk humbly, but love genuinely. Then all the good will come back to us. So, I mean, well, there is so much more that we can share. But dear listeners, we are definitely enjoying this lovely session of, you know, dwelling on Bhagwan's stream of love. William Wordsworth said, the best portion of a good man's life is his little, nameless, unremembered acts of kindness and love. And I think, you know, whether we understand the true reality, whether we understand the dynamics of body, mind, soul, whether we understand, you know, what are the glasses, whether we understand, you know, what others think we are, what we think we are, at least the little things that we can do in our life is to do this little nameless, unremembered acts of kindness and unconditional love. You know, if that's what Swami finally boils down to. Swami says, live and act in joy and love. These two are sufficient. You don't have to know anything else. Just live in love. Live in joy. Know that whatever has happened, it has happened for my good and it is I who has created it. If I want better things in my life in future, let me do good. I will see a very beautiful life unfolding for me in the days to come. Let's have this positive attitude and Swami will take care of the rest. So that is how we come to the end of chapter 21, a beautiful journey so far, and let's see how it goes from now on. Dear listeners, thank you so much for being with us through this journey. As always, please join us. You can share your thoughts, feelings by writing to listener@radiosai.org. So with prayers to Bhagwan that he allows us to continue this satsang, we bring the session to a close. Thank you so much. Salam.